So, talk about consciousness a little bit. What the hell? Underneath, let's say, the rhetoric of life, the litany of my personal identity and story and what's right and wrong with everything according to me, underneath, right, the rhetoric of identity. Well, we have this curious condition or state of affairs. You know, the sentient, biological being, right? The body. The thirst for breath and the thirst for water, the thirst for food, thirst for affection or procreation, the thirst for novelty. So these various thirsts, you can call them, what appears to be the inhabitation of, right, the biologic imperative. These are, you know, perhaps agreeably impersonal, involuntary. The cellular construction of what we call body requires air to breathe and water to drink and food and a robust elimination. Now, being so-called identified with the body as my body, in a sense, interjects a hanger-on, kind of like a remora attached to the belly of a shark. Right, so there's no refuting whatever presence might be, whatever consciousness might be, whatever reality might be. Yes, the presence of the biologic imperative and the hungers, appetites, impulses, and thirsts that accompany it are so. You know, you may have signed up for it. I don't have any personal recollection of having signed up for it or, you know, the animus of prior lifetimes, a clear sign of my absolute lack of enlightenment, admittedly so. The restlessness that accompanies one's so-called identity, the trajectory of one's so-called life, the, you know, appetites and impulses that punctuate, you know, who and what you become. Which, of course, would include your socioeconomic class, the place that you're born, the time period that you are born, your gender, your race, cultural bounty or dearth. I mean, you could say just for fun that nearly every aspect of being are imposed upon you. Whether you're born into, you know, great wealth or afflictive poverty, someplace in between. So the being, sense of being, you know, has a certain signature. A palpable signature. One senses that presence is so. One notices the rhythm and pressure of the biologic sustenance. And the discomfort and suffering that may accompany the frustration of biologic sustenance. But we also notice the frustration of emotional sustenance, the frustration of relational sustenance, tribal sustenance, employment, money making, security seeking, investing, being expressively artistic and perhaps successfully or unsuccessfully so. So we're made of, or we're in a sense forced to grapple with, quite a conundrum of wanting. Placing the imagination of ourselves, the presumption of ourselves into, you know, future scenarios. You know, always seeking for homeostasis, not just of a basic or foundational biological needs, but homeostasis, comfort, security, pleasantries, as concerns our self-identity, our self-esteem, our appearance, who we're hanging with and how well we're enjoying it or not, how we get along with siblings or parents, nuclear and extended family, members of our church, neighbors, country, politics, media. It gets very complicated very quickly, doesn't it? Wanting and needing and being at risk. It gets very complicated very quickly. So our so-called life, you know, can become, perhaps frequently becomes, you know, the thrusting forth had the word a moment ago. Compensation. My behavior is compensatory. My wants, needs, and interests are compensatory. My philosophy, my beliefs, my superstition, my pride of self, they're all compensatory because they're made up. They're imagined into being. They're superimposed on the foundational simplicity of, you know, biological sustainability. So the consciousness, or common or typical human consciousness, is fractured, compensatory, reactive, greedy, full of projection, and the disquietude that accompanies that projection. The angst, heartbreak, of being unnoticed or unloved or unsuccessful. Abandoned, enmeshed, mistreated in a million ways by those that have been mistreated in a million ways. Aha. This is the legacy of our dysfunctional societies. We're really fucked up. Now, I find it, you know, somewhat frustrating and not that satisfying to pursue, you know, psychiatric remedies, emotional remedies, spiritual remedies, philosophical remedies for the, you know, fundamental agitation, the fundamental restlessness, the fundamental angst of individuation. They're all they're also cheap and like costume jewelry. One may discover a few moments here and there of, you know, satisfaction, not long lasting. One adjusts and adopts one's behavior, priorities, sense of generosity, service to others, or quite the opposite, accumulate for self, you know, any number of personality distortions. And no one comes out the winner. Once you find something, anything, and this perhaps is wonderfully subtle, you find anything at all, you're going to congeal around it. Like water vapor congeals around a particle of dust to make rain or snow, depending on the temperature. So if you see the, let's just say, the geometry, the magic of congealing around the most subtle discovery, you know, in whatever consciousness is, and then the reflex to congeal around that, either for entertainment purposes or to drive oneself insane or to try to make oneself happy or for entertainment or validation, you see that's the congealing around the most nuanced dust particle that, you know, imagines itself to be itself, imagines oneself to be personified and individuated. If you don't notice the involuntary reflex or movement that congeal around the slightest discovery and then evoke the world, well, then you end up becoming the, let's just say, victim or product of your own imagination, the product of the world that you have created or that you've signed up for. And I was talking to God the other day. I mean, I didn't reach out, you know, it was knock, knock, who's there, God, you know, God who. So I was like, what's on your mind? And God said, well, you know, ask me a question. I'm like, dude, I'm fresh out. He said, God, ask me a question. I'm like, okay. So I have to think for a moment because, you know, if God says, ask me a question, you don't want to fuck it up, but, you know, you don't want it to be too serious either. So I'm like, so God, so like when you go channel surfing throughout the universe, you know, to kind of enjoy your creation, like what, you know, species do you, are you interested in? You know, what species are you like, heh, meh, you know? He said, well, one of the things I look for is architecture. And if I see a species that has built their architecture around right angles, I ignore them completely because I know that, you know, they're headed for extinction. So that was that. Click. You know, I didn't even get a chance to ask another a follow-up. So I had to like, you know, wow, what is, ooh, whoa, what is, whoa, you know, what is that, whoa. Yeah, so you can see that, you know, this dreams, I mean, well, let me preface it, you know, a while back, you know, it was another knock-knock, who's there, God, you know, God who, and, you know, ask me a question kind of thing, and I'm like, wow, really, you know, when God plays knock-knock with you, you're really on the spot. It's not an easy place to be. So I was like, so like what is the, I said, so God, so what is the, what's the bottom line? What's the basis of all creation? Without hesitation, God said, dreaming. He said, I didn't create no world, no animals, no. One thing only. I just created dreaming. And that was it. Hands off. So that's what this is. That's what this does. It dreams. You know, arguably by God's will. Don't look at me. So this dreams. Then I began to put it together. Oh, yeah, well, this dreams. So, like, you know, a cool species, one that would be worth channel surfing, you know, kind of like to look in on and see what they were all about. You know, if you could kind of get it, like, if their architecture were right angles, you'd be like, there's no imagination there. That species is not matured into the bliss of imagination, because they build their dwellings at right angles. So it's like, done with them. I mean, if you look at financial systems and communication systems and political systems, economic systems, you know, the great and powerful Oz by which we live, all over the planet, 7.6 billion strong and growing. I mean, really? This is the best we could do? And you can see that our consumptive predilection runs rampant through the biosphere, through the exploitation of natural resources and each other and sequestered carbon. So this is how we have come to imagine life on Earth. This is the best we can do. This is the police state that we have conjured. This is the hijacking of representative democracy, of distribution of wealth, of sustainability. Living under the brutal influence of authority and a retribution. misdirection, misinformation. Pathological inability to discern and speak the truth. But clearly, if we are trying to cultivate succor and spiritual satisfaction in the artifacts of the world, we're going to come up somewhat empty-handed. I mean, the best you can do is, you know, microdose psilocybin or something like that and keep a low carbon footprint. There might be other ways, complementary means for cultivating nourishment. Seeing through or seeing past the implications of right angles. Weaning ourselves from the oversaturation with objects. And taking up residence, in a manner of speaking, taking up residence in the inarticulate mystery of things. Freedom from continuity of self. Freedom from memory and imposition. Freedom of craving, supplication, manipulation. You could say many folks, you know, the right angle folks, who are victimized unconsciously by societal systems. Tendency is to want to be happy in consciousness. So what does happy in consciousness mean? Well, health and well-being and discretionary spending and a house that appreciates in value and one or several loving relationships. Esteemed member of your church. Charitable donator, Trump-loving Christian, victim of the Catholic Church, there's tragedy everywhere, despicable, agonizing, self-aggrandizing tragedy everywhere. Yes, so as a contrary to that, complementary and contrary, is non-local consciousness. In other words, instead of trying to affect happiness in consciousness, one might discover a wormhole, a curious wormhole, where you can be nourished by being free from consciousness. Now, a species, one that God would channel surf, that didn't have right angle structures, you know, that's a species that has matured beyond the implication of consciousness and has found its nourishment and succor and tribal care of its minions through dreaming, not through incarcerating systems, not through pyramidal systems where wealth is concentrated at the very top and the influence over wars and banking and oil and gas and natural resources, fertilizers and farming are concentrated in the hands of very, very few. So a species that dreams and dreams nobly does not live in right angle buildings and is free, not in consciousness, but free from consciousness. They take up their mantle in sacred ether, which is turns out to be this, just this. You don't have to go to Mars, though I wish some would. You don't have to go to the Himalayas. You don't have to listen to anything Sadhguru has to say, or Adyashanti for that matter. Because you're not trying to perfect the tragic hallucination of life in consciousness. That's dead end, and you know that by now. Maybe. So try a new approach, a new tack. See what it might feel like to be relieved of consciousness. To be relieved of the myth and performance anxiety of personal continuity. So that you're not defined by your own appetites, by your own memories, by your own compensatory superstitions and beliefs, and things that you hold to be true or untrue about yourself and everybody and everything else. What horseshit? It shouldn't be that difficult to sit, stand, just as you are, just where you are, without being the product of your own imagination, the product of your own hallucination, the product of your own injuries. To be willing not to find anything at all, so that the reflex to congeal around what it is you imagine you have found, even before you could say you're, quite conscious of it. Whatever the hell this is, here's the presence of presence. And that word pisses me off because it becomes fetishized and then we think that presence becomes, an object. Or even, a sensation. But you have the capacity, I claim it so, without authority, you have the capacity to leave or wean oneself from the hysteria of imagination, meaning self-image, the temporality and spatiality of time, place, coordinates, and self-image. One has the inherent intelligence to wean oneself from the implication of anything and everything that you believe or hold true about yourself as a so-called creature, you know, as a biologic unit, gifted with, you know, a handful of thirsts. What can you, what do you, what will you notice if you wean yourself from the myth and mirth of personal continuity? If you release yourself from the anxiety of opinion, of your cosmic or practical to-do list, of the need to be relevant, validated, useful, worthwhile. If we experiment with being released from the projected complexity, the utility, the imposition of consciousness, what might you find? We're leaning in a different direction than one that tries to espouse ameliorative strategies for what ails you. What ails you is consciousness and the tragedy of it. That's what ails you in all of the nefarious ways that we are ailed, imposed upon, humiliated and exploited, or do humiliating and exploiting of others, sentient and otherwise. That's what there is in consciousness, right? The magnificent, seductive sirens of hallucinatory experience, individuated experience, sensual experience, psychiatric and emotional experience, and all of the value propositions that accompany that. It's a fucking hell realm. But you knew that by now. Though it's a hell realm, our tendency, our predilection, is to try to make it less of a hell realm, or try hope that we can accomplish winning in consciousness, that we can become something happy, wealthy, healed, valuable, worthwhile, in control of our senses, of service to others, power over others, whatever floats your curious persona that you, of course, had nothing to do with. See, as your, call it consciousness or call it attention, everything becomes interchangeably and is all lies anyway, so what the fuck? Call it whatever. As you explore and experiment with getting out of the right angle of your own imagination, take the risk to see what it feels like to be free from consciousness, not winning in consciousness. Now you've shifted the geometry of the dreaming. Quite naturally, you're the power and profundity of dreaming. You could say takes up or residence or abides in itself. Nourished by the peculiarity of dreaming itself. Not the artifacts, not the objects, not anything to do about anything. Byron Katie did not come to fruition because she did the work. She sells that to you. But that's not how she came to fruition, not by doing the work. The fruition, presuming there was one, was involuntary, impersonal, was not the consequence or the result of anything, including the suffering and the dark night of the soul and the cockroach on the bare ass and, you know, whatever the stories are. And, of course, there's a million of them. Ramana Maharshi did not come to fruition by saying, Amike, who am I? And on and on. This is the fruition. Yes, this is it. Yes. Now, here, this. If you go right angle on this, you might be trying to improve, approve, get approved in consciousness as the consequence of a mayhem of absolute tragedy. Biologic imposition, greed and stupidity. That's not going to fucking work. Look at us. I mean, we're about 10 seconds away from total extinction. Count it down. The fruition. Makes itself known, reveals itself to itself, not to you. You're the product of trying to make it in consciousness. You're an idiot. The fruition makes itself known, is self-revealing. As you give yourself permission to wean yourself from the useless productivity of space and time, hubris, and identity. Give yourself the permission to wean yourself from implication, from prior knowledge, prior experience, from all of the justifications of who it is and why it is you think that you're you, according to your imaginary will, which is clearly heretical. You don't have to let go of nothing. You don't got to sacrifice nothing. You don't got to surrender to nothing. None of that. You don't have to purify nothing. You don't got to chant nothing. Get off your knees. Stop giving coconuts to gurus. If you live with Muji, get out of there. There's no spiritual authority. No one has accomplished anything. Even the great Mahatmas and Mahatmajis, they haven't accomplished anything. There's nothing there for you. Once you fetishize a mutant, you're in trouble. If you fetishize a mutant, now you're less than. Now you're subjugable to. You're worshipful of. That's not going to work. You're still trying to, you know, get somewhere in this consciousness shitbag. Get out from under this. Get under the hood. See what it feels like to wean yourself from the imposition of, the implication of consciousness itself. Stop trying to win. Don't do anything for anybody. There's nothing to justify. Nothing is the reason that something else is the result of. There's no result, there's no reason, there's no causality. Nothing happened before now, nothing's happening now, nothing happens hence. Get out of the right angle. Release yourself from the myth of value systems. Be willing to relieve yourself of the performance anxiety of anthropomorphization. You got nothing to prove to anyone, most importantly to yourself. We don't really want what this is. What we want is the way that we feel about things. What we want is the pride and presumption, the projection of how we feel about things, not what this actually is. There is no reference for what this actually is. Not an anthropocentric reference, not a cosmic reference, not a physics reference, not a Pleiadian, Arcturian, Lemurian reference. If there were an advanced civilization, even just one, what the fuck would they be doing here? Any civilization, whether Arcturian, Pleiadian, Lemurian, you name it, that's fucking with us, not so advanced. Bored, maybe, but not advanced. Don't take any instructions from ascended masters, from enlightened people, least of all them. What bothers you is you. You bother you. You blame it on other people and other things, but it's you that bothers you. Then you want to figure out, well, what should I do about myself? So I should be less bothersome to myself. Well, that's too late. What could you possibly do about the imagination of yourself that will be less bothersome to the imagination of yourself? That's not going to fucking work. You can get out from under this. But not as the creature, not as the person, not as the supplicator, not as the enjoyer. Because all of those are referential. Presence is non-referential. Presence is the release of the imagination of yourself. Or that things matter to you in the way that you insist that they matter to you, according to your choice and will and preference. Ha. If we try to fix this, we're stuck. We try to improve our circumstances or conditions in a dysfunctional and sick, exploitive socioeconomic system, we're fucked. Even the uber wealthy that live above the law, above consequence. Fucked. No amount of food, money, power, Learjet, survival bunkers in New Zealand will make them happy. And happy is not what this is about anyway. If you see through the implication of yourself, if you see the nature in which consciousness congeals on the slightest presence of dust and manufactures a hellacious universe, if you see it, not that you can do anything about it. I mean, leave it alone. But if you don't see it, if you don't see the mechanism, the geometry by which individuation, anthropomorphization, time, space, self-concern, self-referencing appear, then you'll be the victim of it. You can't help but to be the victim of it. And then finding all the frustration that we find, all the indignation and violation that we find, then we try to do something about it. How the fuck are you going to get out of it? You're not. Unless, of course, you do the work. That's not going to fucking work either. As you become willing or invited to peer into the genesis and geometry of apparent consciousness, you might discover that it's not you. You're not doing it. And if it's not you, and you're not doing it, well, then why sign up or why suffer the apparent implication of it? If you're unwilling, again, through no fault or choice of your own, to peer into the magical, apparitional nature of conscious experience, then you will take yourself to be a born creature, bookended by the apparency of birth and death. I'm sorry. I'm waxing on. And you said there's... I can see things. I was drunk on my own narrative. Let's see what we got here. What am I supposed to... What's the question? Imagination arises. What do you do when imagination pesters? There's a question. Where does intuition fall? Uh-huh. Oh, that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's cool. Okay. We can... So, pestering. Yeah. Well, pardon me, but... We're fucked. This pesters. Self-identity is made out of pestering. As long as one is the product, consciously, unconsciously, voluntarily, involuntarily, of personification. Pestering is all you're going to find. Sometimes the pestering is pleasant. Sometimes the pestering is out of this fucking world. The sense of creature is comprised, is made of, imbued with the pestering, the right soliloquy of imagination, which is self, the identification with whatever consciousness is, whatever incoming stream of impressions or influences are, and then the like or the dislike, the attraction and the aversion toward the stream, that's self, personified perception. Get it. Meditate, maybe less pestering. Yoga, maybe less pestering. Drugs, probably less pestering. Four questions and a turnaround, meh. Adyashanti, who the fuck knows? Ramdas hasn't helped anybody. You see, wanting to be unafflicted by pestering is trying to feel better in the mayhem in the shitbox of consciousness. Sometimes it looks, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it appears causal, sometimes it's not. Something that works for 5 years stops working all of a sudden. Who the fuck knows? Any quality that we find and then use an accurate or inaccurate or poetic word or inference or symbol to refer to that quality, it's, you're too late because you're already congealed. You've already got a universe in which you find yourself as the enjoyer or the victim, the sufferer or the sanguine. And then one becomes a product of this hysteria, of this narrative continuity, of implication, and the somaticization and the emotivity that accompanies happiness or unhappiness, security or lack thereof. Woo, 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 woo. And then the wishing to move away from imposition or suffering, being treated poorly, afflictive thinking. What? More of same. I mean, it's certainly understandable, certainly forgivable. Just more of same. The congealing and the congealing and the congealing places us in the imagination of being individuated, individualized, somatic, conscious, perceptive, full of choice. So if we're the product of a involuntary didactic, then this or we identify and associate with this profound pageantry. There's going to be a lot of discomfort. A lot of disquietude. A lot of disappointment. Even to ask who is being pestered is just a clever way, forgive me, it's just a clever way of staying in the game. Who is being pestered? And even the ongoing impulse to explore a narrative, explore a solution, explore a conclusion, find some kind of relational ease of mind, or what to do or what not to do. All of these are just the symptoms, ongoing symptoms of the involuntary movement of anthropomorphization. What to do about what is like an invitation for one to say, I have agency. I have agency. I'm unhappy. What to do? You can notice how this sense of identification, of virtual reality, of self, just arises out of thin air. Not from conception, not from birth, not from the terrible twos, not when you shifted out of your teens into your whatever. No, it does it here, it does it now. It does it here, it does it now. The myth of oneself is constructed here. It's constructed now. So with some agreeable witnessing, not a great word, of the presently appearing apparatus of apparition, then sign off. Just sign off. There's no conclusion, there's no remedy, there's no what to do about this and what to do about that. Just sign off. Here this is, don't ask me what it is, I don't know. But whatever it is, if it's anything at all, maybe here it is. I mean, that's dubious. What the fuck does here mean? Sometimes I enjoy using the word irrefutable. I'm not saying I know or anyone can know what it is, but there's, fuck me, there's something, and not necessarily a thing. There's the irrefutability of God knows what. But if we wean ourselves from objectifying it and fetishizing it, having names and symbols and accusation and projection about it, maybe there's a moment of relief or release from the hubris of identity, the myth of continuity. The story one tells oneself about oneself. one can, may I say, back away. Baby step back from the forwardness, the formidability of entrancement. And we have to be willing, self-permission, to do that now. To back away from self-entrancement here. With no concern for how it might feel. Whether it has any implication. In hopes of discovering some kind of spiritual bliss. Take a baby step back from entrancement. This isn't about anything. It needn't become anything. Not better, not worse, not solved. Drop the strategy of what about me? What's going to happen to me? How will I cope with this or that? How will I manage this or that? If we associate freedom with security, we're going to be disappointed. It will elude us. Perhaps if freedom were associated with a release from needing or wishing to be secure, that's a different level of play. the metaphor of surfing is a slippery one. If the tendency, habit of personification slips in and becomes my surfing, or the experience of surfing reality, whether enjoyable or otherwise, then you can see the genesis of that curious split or duality, in that we become enamored of experiencing. And if surfing, not saying it must be, but if surfing is a metaphor for traveling lighter, enjoying oneself spiritually, then it becomes another object. It becomes another experience. And the personification of agency comes back. Yes. Well, we could say surfing is what this is. But if we pull the agency out of it, we pull the sensuality out of it, we pull the temporality out of it, is it surfing? The qualification of whatever present experience is after the fact. The qualification of anything is superimposed. One reflects upon the curious nature, let's say, of experiencing or reality, and then comes up with a pithy or poetic metaphor or reference for it. And now our attention goes to the symbol rather than the fact, goes to the acquisition or the poetry rather than the fact. We don't need to explain this to anyone. We certainly don't need to explain it to ourselves. This is perfectly so, whatever the fuck that means, in absolute presence, which is absolute vacuity. Is it empty? Is it full? Did it begin? Is it happening now? When will it end? If we grant ourselves the gift to no longer qualify. Present experience at all. There's no directionality. There's no disagreeable or agreeable discovery. Nothing need be done. It's only with the genesis that occurs in present experience for qualification to arise. The congealing of and the manufacture of a relational referential world. That's where all the suffering is. Not to dismiss biological suffering, physical suffering, the indignation of a species gone mad and genociding itself through war and famine and weapons and incarceration and banking and militarism and environmental destruction. I mean, you know, that's some good suffering. Qualifying can certainly be appreciated as being automatic or involuntary. The biases, as we see the apparatus, the geometry, the magic, the apparitional magic of qualifying, see it intimately. See the implication of qualifying as the apparition of self and the apparition of circumstances. And likewise suffer the malnourishment of the apparition of self and the apparition of circumstances. Then maybe we are incentivized to wean ourselves from the hallucination of qualifying and do so now. One relaxes the impulse to name, to accuse, to objectify. As we become more acquainted, familiar, welcoming. Of presence on its terms. With some mature degree of ease. We might find some delight in the cessation of objectifying, the cessation of qualification, the cessation of accusation. Maybe we become a little bold. Absolutist, in a manner of speaking, so that we're not parsing reality into suffering and not suffering, or even what we might call welcoming. With the absence of agency, the cessation of agency, there's no welcoming, but there's no rejection either. There's no longer a role for you to play. Wouldn't that be sweet? There's no longer the impulse or the reflex to interject the imagination of myself into present experience. Where's the welcoming? Where's the surrender? To what? If you're not qualifying, not objectifying, not placing yourself hysterically in the coordinate of time, space, and self. Woo, 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 woo. Ungots. There's no role for us to play. There's never been a role for us to play. That is imagined. Here we are, if we are, wherever we are, here we are. Where the fuck is my past? Where's the great storage unit of all my memories and my experiences? The one ones I was happy about, the ones I was unhappy about, the ones that I want to hide from everyone for time immemorial. Where the fuck am I? Oof. The pride of self can evaporate in an instant. You can't actually find yourself. You can only imagine yourself finding yourself, which is the apparition of yourself. Yes, consciousness qualifies. Consciousness seduces. Consciousness pretends to be imbued with agency, choice, decision, right, wrong, above and below, before and after. With the genesis of qualification is synonymous with the genesis of self. And that's where all the quarrel is. It's a little unnerving. and perhaps liberate him, that this isn't about anything. That there might not be anything to discover. Nothing to write home about. Certainly nothing upon which to build a Pali canon or a Ramayana or a, the Vedas or the Gitas or the Old or New Testament or the Book of Mormon. There's nothing actually here upon which one builds a fallacious and incarcerating mythology and calls it God. Bullshit. And yet, we who live in right-angled dwellings have conducted genocides and patricides of all kinds for thousands of years based on superstition, belief, the will and the writings of the divine. Sheesh. Craving for identity, craving for validation, craving for explanation, craving implication. It's all suffering. Involuntary anthropomorphization of self derived from fantasy. Well, if that's not enough, I don't know what is. Thank you for joining me this evening. It's a most indulgent rant. I'm not apologetic, and I can't excuse myself. Perhaps we'll see you again. Thank you.